This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
The avodah which has been given to a person to perform is dependent on their existing in the world concepts of good and evil, and man having been placed in between them to make the choice of doing the good. The details of tov and ra are extensive. Because every midah tov is part of the good area, and every midah ra is part of the bad area, and there are vast areas of spectrum in between. Derech Moshel, for example, hageus minyone hara, arrogance belongs to the world of evil. Ha'anova minyone hatov, and modesty belongs to the area of good. Harachmonus minyone hatov, hefche ha'achzarius. Rachmonus is part of the area of good, and the opposite is cruelty. Haistapkus va'asimcho bechelko minyone hatov, satisfaction and enjoyment of what one possesses is part of good. V'hofcho minyone hara, and the opposite is bad. V'chein kol shar prote amidus, and so it is with all the midas, that the scale of midas moves from bad to good and vice versa.
That some of the so-called bad are good in certain areas.
Correct. So there are times when one has to put that all together. But as they stand, in essence, achzarius is in essence something bad. Sometimes it needs to be used, but in essence, it belongs to the world of the negative. And the Ribbono Shel Olam evaluated all these details. This whole spectrum of areas of possibilities that are feasible in the human condition that we have mentioned and that play a part in the purpose of creation, and made them available in all their details with their causes and their effects and everything that follows them, and created their feasibility in man, so that this spectrum, this whole scale of activity, is within man's capability. However, in order to create the potential for each of these possibilities to be expressed, man has to find himself in different conditions, Shekulom yiyu nisoyon lahim, which are all nisoyonis. But mashi yitnu mokum lechol protei bechinos hara ha'eli al mokum l'odom nizchazei kenegdom belitfeis betoivis. Giving man the opportunity to utilize all these bad characteristics, or to stand up against them and opt for the good. So here we're developing the concept of nisoyon as the area of expression of man's value system. So Ribbono Shel Olam creates a value system which in potential crosses the full spectrum from completely negative to completely positive, and has to now create situations which make man need to choose the appropriate response and make available to him responses varying from the extreme, from one extreme to the other extreme. Derech Moshel, im lo ayu ashirim va'aniyim, if there were no such things as people who were very rich and very poor, there would be no opportunity for man to be very merciful or very cruel. But now, now the wealthy man can be tested in his wealth to see whether he will be cruel to the poor man, or whether he'll be merciful. And so the poor man can be tested in his poverty to see whether he will be satisfied with what he has and thank the Ribbono Shel Olam, or the opposite. So until the pressure is turned on, there is no real expression of a value system. A value system only comes to expression when the human being is under pressure. When the pressure is removed, there is no real opportunity for the expression of a value system.
Im yorum boy liboy,
Furthermore, wealth can be an opportunity for expression as a test to see whether the rich man becomes arrogant, whether he will follow the unimportant pleasures of the world at the expense of the service of the Ribbono Shel Olam Yisborach, v'im kol osho ye'ono v'nichna, or whether with all his wealth he will remain a humble person, umoyes behevlei ha'olam, one who despises meaningless activities, uvoicher b'toyro v'avoyde, and one who chooses toyro v'avoyde, v'chein kol kiyotze b'zeh, and so with all of them. So each one of these situations, man is constantly placed in situations which apply pressure on him in one area or another to express, to make a value choice. And the choices he makes under that pressure is the measure of who he really is, not the choices he makes when he's not under pressure. To make it to the shir when you've got nothing else to do in the afternoon, that doesn't express any kind of avas tira or anything. That's not much different to the guy who goes to have a drink after work. That's the routine, that's what you do. Go and meet the buddies, have a drink, and listen to the shir, go home. That's the routine. The test is when it's almost impossible to make it. To what extent one is willing to reorganize one's routine to be kaveh itim l'toira. That's where the test becomes real. And so with all the things, to give tzedakah where it doesn't hurt, somebody comes, you give a bit of tzedakah, and it's okay, and you can still have everything you would have had in any case. That's not a test of tzedakah. A test of tzedakah is when you've got to say that particular item that I was planning to buy, or that particular thing I was planning to do, the money I was going to put into that, I'd rather put into tzedakah. Then it's a test. Then it's an expression of a value system. It's not an expression of a value system when you can give it without it really coming at the expense of anything else. And so with all our value systems, unless we're choosing one value at the expense of something else which we might have rather have done, we're not really being tested in values. And that's where the human being grows, and that's where the human being develops. He doesn't develop in that bulk area, which is most of the time where we're making choices which don't really make that much difference either way. They're choices which come relatively easy.
ואומנם חילקו החוכמה העליונה יש עניוני הניסיון האלה בין איש מן האנושי. The Ribbono Shel Olam has distinguished these types of nisyonos dependent on each individual person. כמו שגוזר בו ימי קצוסו היוסו רואי ונויסס, Hashem has decreed in his deep wisdom. ונמצא לכל איש ואיש מבני אדם חלק מיוחד בניסיון ובמלחמת היצר. And so every single human being is granted a specific area of battle in the waging the war against the Yetzer. Each person has his nisyonos in a specified area. We can't all be tested everywhere. Firstly, it's too vast, and secondly, we don't have the capacity, and sometimes there isn't the need. Some things come to some people easy, and they come to other people difficult, hard. And the Ribbono Shel Olam takes every individual and designs for him an area of battle which is unique to his situation. That is his duty. Yeah. What do they call it in the army when they give an officer an assignment? Yeah, that's his assignment and his responsibility in Olam Hazeh.
A bit like pickle, good and solid.
Like what?
Like pickle.
The tzorich lamud boy kefi mashu, and he's got to try and stand up and hold that area. That's what he's got to do.
The yudnu maso b'midas dino yisborach kefi hamaso asher nitan loy be'emes b'chol b'chinoisov,
and his deeds will be judged by the Ribbono Shel Olam with his justice, taking into account the weight of the load he's been given to hold. The tachlis hadikduk, with perfect exactness. And that's like the servants of the king all standing ready to serve him. And among them all the duties of the malchus have to be fulfilled. And he gives each one an area of duty. Each minister in the cabinet has his area that he's got to look after. So that among all the members of the cabinet, the entire areas of the state is taken care of. And each one is given the responsibility to fulfill that area which has been handed to his responsibility. And in accordance with his achievements of that of his particular assignment, so will he be rewarded by the king. Achmidas Achilu Kazeh Odrochov Disgavim Oid Masagusein of Yev Shalom Lamed Aleim. The way the Ribbono Shalom divides us up is far beyond any ability of ours to fully understand. Ki Machochma Elyona and Disgavim Mikol Seichel He Shiartom VeHe Sidrosom BoIfen Hayos Hasholim. It's the Ribbono Shalom's wisdom that has actually organized it in the most perfect way. But that is the area that each person needs to know, that there is an area of Nisoyon which has been chosen for him, in which he operates and where he is constantly being confronted with a need to make value choices. And since the world consists of the Yishtalshlus concept, which we've discussed, this whole chain linkage system from their finest spiritual essence down to their physical manifestation, all these concepts, the details of man's challenges, their essence begins up in the spiritual world, in accordance with the reality there that exists of improving and impairing. And from there these principles are judged and decreed to exist and to filter down to their physical form. So that with this division of responsibility, the entire Bria is covered. Every person has an area to be responsible for, to be challenged in, and among all of humanity, the whole Bria is interacting with mankind. And over all this, the Ribbono Shel Olam supervises and watches, ensuring that each one gets his proper place. Nimtzo in Perek Gimel, in Pesiv Gimel, Nimtzo lefi Asherish Hazed emerges according to this principle, She'atzlochos Olam Hazeh v'tzoroisof, that the successes of this world and their difficulties in order that a particular man should be challenged in a particular area of achievement. So that even every hatzlocha and every tzorot, there's no difference really between them. Each one of them throws man into a new challenge. Sometimes the challenge is caused by hardship, sometimes it's caused by success. Both of them create pressure. There's no situation into which man finds himself that he shouldn't realize is a situation of pressure designed to bring the best out of him or the worst. That's up to him to decide how he handles it. But there's no situation you can stop yourself in any moment in life and you can say, what's going on? Why? What's happening? The answer is, I'm being challenged. The Ribbono Shel Olam wants me to express my potential in this situation. That's why he's put me here. There isn't one moment in life where we will find ourselves in a situation where Hashem isn't challenging us. It's like a person's working for a balabos, and he realizes the balabos is trying to test him to see how he operates, to see how good he is. And he realizes that in every situation in which the balabos puts him, it's to test him in a different area, to see how he operates in a different area. So it is with the Yoilam. There is no other purpose in life. At all times you can stop yourself and say, I'm in this situation because there is a challenge. You've just got to figure out what the challenge is. You've got to figure out what the... And most of the time we don't... It's not a question of passing or failing. We just sort of go through not even noticing that what we're doing is being challenged. I remember as a child once they had a competition that you could, if you won the competition, you could get free flying lessons, and I was very interested in flying. So I entered the competition, I was doing very well. And they take you up and you've got to hold the controls and they see your coordination and your feel for it. Everything was going fine. I was pretty nervous, as you can imagine. We taxi up and we come to a stop, and the instructor is next to me, says, shoo, takes out a cigarette, says, you've got a match. I said, no. He says, sorry, you failed. no business smoking in an aeroplane on a tarmac. What was it? I didn't notice. I thought the test was over. Once we came to a stop, I thought the test is over. I've either lost, either won or lost. There's nothing more I can do. It's never over. You're being challenged with every situation that is facing you. You're being challenged. Nothing is there just so. There's no coincidence. There's nothing that is there for no reason. Every little thing that happens, every little thing, every situation that comes from the moment you're bar mitzvah, at least, until the moment you die, every situation, at every moment of your life is a challenge. And is there to give you the opportunity to draw on the deepest potential that exists and to bring that to fruition and to bring that to reality. And as I say, mostly it's not even a question of failing the test. Mostly we don't even notice, we don't retain an awareness that that is in fact what is happening at that particular time. We'll see if Dalla deals with Siyata Dishmaya. And how the Siyata Dishmaya is something that we can stimulate. As, based on last night's shir, what we've discussed up till now this morning is all initiated from the Ribbono Shel Olam. And that's the meaning of a Nisoyin, that everything that comes our way has been initiated by the Ribbono Shel Olam with the purpose of seeing what we do with it. In Siv Dalit, it's a little different. There, the way we handle things can, in turn, arouse different levels and different degrees of Siyata Dishmaya, where we can initiate God's response to us in certain areas, which Mirtz Hashem will handle next week. Piece of Gemara with Gemara and Rashi at least, because as I said, we need to try and get right through the sugya in order to understand the first parts of it. The subject of the sugya is the halakhic status of slaves. Whether we're going to treat them as we do karka or we're going to treat them as we do metaltalin. Karka is immovable property, metaltalin is movable property. Why should we treat them as either? What's the nafkamina? So everything is either karka or metaltalin. Evid is the only, evid is a very unique object in halacha, in monetary law, because it doesn't really fit into either category. Apart from evid, every object fits into either metaltalin or karka. Evid is a new category, but we've got to categorize it. We've got to classify it either as metaltalin or karka. The question is with an Eved, what do we mean by movable? On the one hand, an Eved is movable because he moves from place to place. On the one hand, that's not what we mean by movable, something which moves from place to place. What do we mean by movable property? Something which the owner moves. Are we going to regard an Eved as something which the owner can move around as he moves an object? Or are we going to say, no, he's a human being, you don't move him around, he can move himself around. Moving yourself around doesn't make you metaltalin. That makes you movable karka. What's the essence of karka? I can't dominate karka by moving it around. There are different ways that you can dominate things. And one of the most effective ways of dominating an object is by moving it. At the Shiva house the other afternoon, Rabbi Rubin was there and we were discussing discipline in classrooms. He was saying, but it's difficult. If you walk into a wild classroom, what do you do? And I said, you move the kids around. Teacher walks in and says, you sit there, you sit there, you sit there, you sit there. And the next day you move them around differently. And you tell them if the curtains are open, you tell them to close them. If the windows are open, you tell them to close them, vice versa. Lights on, tell them to put it off. Lights off, tell them to put it on. What are you doing? You're moving people. And by moving people, you're making them less than avodim. Because as we're talking about an evid, if an evid is not like metaltalin, you're making them into metaltalin. I will move you. I will put you where I want you to be. That is one of the most dominating actions that a person can do. And that's why in dictatorial societies, the moving of populations is part of the way that governments express their control over population groups, and the governing of where they live and where they can't live, and so on. That's part of the way that you actually dominate them. That was a method of domination. So the question is an Eved, does an Eved fit into that category that can be dominated by moving around, or do we say no? is karka. Karka is something which you can't dominate by moving. You've got to find other ways of dominating karka. And all the laws of kinyonim are really principles in domination. How you show your domination over an object. How you express your domination. It's a token expression. But by studying the token, we can actually study the system. And karka cannot be dominating by movement. Cannot be dominated by movement. How you express your control and your mastery over karka is not by movement. Comes the question, what is an eved? Can an eved be dominated by movement, or must an eved be must we find other ways of dominating the eved? Are we going to classify the eved as movable karka, or are we going to classify the eved as metaltilin? That's the subject of the sugya. It's a fascinating sugya. The Omar Ulo Omar Rabbi Elozer Hilchasa Goivin Min HaAvodim. The halacha is that you can be goive from avodim. What does that mean? Says Rashi. Goivin choiv min haavodim. That means that if somebody owes you money, you can claim the debt from avodim. If he hasn't got cash to pay, you can attach his avodim. You can take his slaves. Omar le Rav Nachman lula. Rav Nachman asked Ula. Omar Rabbi Lozor afilu miyasmi. Did Rabbi Elozer mean that you can claim an eved even from a yosim, from an orphan? That means if the father has died and the yosimim have inherited the avodim, did Rabbi Elozer mean that you can claim the avodim even from the yosim? Says Rashi, afilu miyasmi, im meis loive v'noflu kamiyasmi. If the loive died, if the borrower died, and the Yisoyim and the Avodim fell to the Yisoyim. Mi Omar Rabbi Elozer the Baal Choyiv goyve min Avodim. Did Rabbi Elozer say that a Baal Choyiv can claim from the Avodim of the orphans? Dechem mekarkoi domu, because they are like karka, and one may claim karka from Yisoyim, one may not claim metaltalim from Yisoyim. If a debt is outstanding, you can claim cash or metaltalim or karka, but not metaltalim. What about Avodim? So Rabbi Elozer got all very excited. Are we saying, therefore, in Rabbi Elozer's statement, Rav Nachman got all excited, are we saying in Rabbi Elozer's statement that avodim are classified like karka? That's what he means, that you can claim avodim from yisoyimim. For those who are relatively new in the shir, you've got two hands, one for the Gemara, one for the Rashi. When you're learning through a sugya the first time and we're skipping backwards from Gemara and Rashi, if you don't have your two fingers, one on the Gemara and one on the Rashi, then there's no mercy on you. You have no right to understand anything, because that's why you're given two fingers.
Seems from
the Moskva, this is more a question at this point. This is a question, yes. This Abdul has a question. Omar Yasmi answers Ula, Loi Mine. Says Rashi, Mine min aloi ve'atzme. No. It all he means is you can claim avodim from the loive. Omer Rabbi Lozo, the bal choiv goive min avodim. But if a person owns avodim, you can claim the choiv from those avodim too. Says Rav Nachman, minei. Do you mean even from himself? Afilu miglimid al kasve. If you're talking about himself, you can even claim a choiv from the shirt that's on his back. Do you see what his chayvus is? We walk around and it doesn't bother us that we owe money. If you bought something on 30-day credit, at 30 days, the guy you bought from can come and say, and you say, sorry, I haven't got money. He says, you haven't got money. That's a nice jacket you're wearing. He says, my jacket? It's my only jacket. It's Friday. What am I going to wear for Shabbos? That's your problem. You take the jacket, you value it. The trousers, a suit would just about make it right. Trousers, these are the only trousers I've got. So you'll have to walk around in pajamas. Machayv, it's 30 days. I want machayv. That's fully entitled to do it. Fully, halakhically fully entitled to do it. So if you're allowed to take a person's only suit, what's the shayla of his avodim? Of course you can take his avodim. Answers the Gemara, Hocha b'maya skinen. What are we talking about? She'aso apotiki. Where this eved was made an apotiki. Kiderova, using the rule of Rova, the Omar Rova, for Rova said, also avdei apotiki u mechoroi, if a person sold his, made his eved an apoisaki, we'll see in a moment exactly what that means, and he sold the eved, bal choiv goive hemenu. A bal choiv may claim his debt from that eved, even though it's in the hands of a purchaser, of a buyer. Shoiro apoisaki yom choroi, but if a person made his shoir, which is metaltalin, an apoisaki, and he sold it, in bal choiv goive hemenu. His Baal Chayiv cannot claim from him. He cannot claim, the Baal Chayiv cannot claim the shor. My timer, what is the reason? Ho isle kalo, v'ho lesle kalo. One is known and the other is not known. When a person makes an eved in a posuki and it becomes bonded to a Baal Chayiv, people are aware of it. When a person bonds a shor to a Baal Chayiv, people are not aware of it. So napoisiki is when you attach a particular object of yours and say, this choiv can be claimed from this particular object, not from my general assets. But this particular object is set aside to pay the choiv in the event that I won't have the cash. Like it works with these higher purchase agreements and leases and things like that. If you buy a car and you lease it or hire a purchase or whatever it is, and you haven't got the money to keep up the payments, they take the car. They don't come and take other things. Are they allowed to take other things if the car's lost value? Nobody knows.
So you'll value the car as a shortfall, they'll sue you for the balance.
And if you haven't got money for the balance?
Then they get a judgment.
They can still go for you for the rest. Yeah. So the car is only the first, there's only the beginning of it all. So that's the same, then your car is like an apoisiki. That's the first thing, that's the thing that goes. So a person can make a shor an apoisiki, you can make an eved an apoisiki. If it's an eved, it has a call. If it's a shor, it doesn't. How would you classify motor cars? As a shor or an eved? I would say in this respect, like an eved probably. It's recorded, or you can check up in the banks, people know about it, it's in the normal way of buying.
Engine numbers.
And it's identifiable, yeah. It's I would classify from this point of view that a car is like an eved, not like a shor.
Surely a classic apotheke is the bond on the house.
Yes, but that's karka. Here we're talking about something which isn't karka.
You also said that eating with karka has got a call.
All karka has got a kol.
Metaltalin
now. So, and metaltalin generally does not have a kol. And eved, we're trying to classify somewhere in between. Eved, we're trying to classify in between. Says Rashi. The kaporich minei. The Gemara asks minei. Afilu min glimu dal kasve. Answer the Gemara. Apoisiki, which means apoi tehei koi. Here it should stand. This is from here it should stand. Now most people think that apoitik is a Greek word, and it is a Greek word, but the Greeks took it from us, not us from them. This is the origin of the word apoitahekoi, and there are many Greek words which are of Hebrew origin, and there are many Latin words which are of Hebrew origin. And I think I mentioned to you once, Rabbi Glazes, and showed me how the Oxford Dictionary will go out of its way to trace words to the Latin and Greek and all sorts of other weird language origins, but very seldom to their very obvious Hebrew origins. And he claims that most words, in fact, in classical languages have Hebrew origins. And here's a typical example of what you're asking, but what does apoitiki mean? They'll tell you that it's a Greek word, and it's a legal term which is still used today. But it comes from apoitahekoi, that's where it comes from. Kloima, that means, mizeh yehelecho piroi, and from this you will be paid. Vashmi'in and Rabbi Elozer, and what does Rabbi Elozer teach us? De'im mecholoi goyve balchoiv mimenu. So we're going back and we're saying, it doesn't mean from Yesoimim, and it doesn't mean from he himself. He himself is obvious. From Yesoimim, well, we'll have to still analyze what the situation is with Yesoimim. But if it's sold, if the Eved is sold, and it's an Aposiki, then you can claim from the Eved, even though it's in the hands of a buyer. Lebosa de Nofak, after Rav Nachman had gone out, Omaluhu Ulo said to the people sitting in the base of Medrash who'd witnessed this exchange, Hochi Omar Rabbi Loza, do you want to know what Rabbi Loza really said? Afilu miyasmi, he said even from Yosemite. Says Rashi, Lebosa de Nofak Rav Nachman, after Rav Nachman left, Omaluhu Ulo le Yoshvin Lefono. Ulo said to those people who were sitting before him, Hochi Omar Rabbi Loza, afilu miyasmi, da avdo kemekarko idomi, because Eved is like karka, it doesn't even have to be an apusiki. Just as you can claim karka from a yosim, so you can claim karka from a yosim. That's what Rabbi Loza really said. Amar Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman later heard what Ula had owned up to, and they asked him what he thought of it, and he said, "Ishtamtin Ula." Ula slipped out of my hands, says Rashi. Ishtamtin Ula nishmat mimeni. He escaped from me. Vayiro. If we use the Gersa in the margin, and he was afraid to say it before me, mishum desvira li avdekim metaltali dami, because I hold that avodim are like metaltalim, umisiyorei hu shema akapchenu bahalochus uvekushus, and he was afraid I was going to challenge him and make his life miserable with halochus and kashus, so he didn't want to get into the discussion and he avoided it. By the way he did. So what happened here? We've got Rav Nachman coming, Rav Ula saying something in the name of Rabbi Elazar. Rav Nachman questioning what exactly did Ula mean? What exactly did Rabbi Elazar mean? Ula being scared to say exactly what he meant because he wouldn't be able to defend that viewpoint. So he waters it down a little bit. And when Rav Nachman is gone, he tells the Talmidim what Rabbi Elazar really said. What's it all about? What's the Gemara telling us?
So was it Ula who mixed it
on the apotiki? Yes. Yeah.
And then he says,
"True, really, it's not even enough. You don't even need an apotiki." Rav Nachman holds, Rabbi Elazar holds it. Avdes kimikakuri. That's what he really holds. But I wasn't prepared to tell Rav Nachman that, because Rav Nachman would have challenged me with questions that I couldn't have answered.
What were those questions?
We'll see. Some of them we'll still see, but who knows? Who knows what they would have been?
So why stick to the position?
So we want to show. What's the emes? If you won't be able to defend the position, then be big enough to back down from it. And if you can defend the position, why not try?
Ula heard it from his Rebbe.
So Ula heard it from his Rebbe. So Ula has a Masoris. He's saying it in the name of Rabbi Loza. Therefore what?
So
he's Mekabel. So he's Masoris, he's Mekabel. So why doesn't he just tell Rav Nachman that? You're asking good kashes. I don't know the answers. My Rebbe taught me. I can't answer it. Isn't that the obvious thing to say?
He admits he knows the logic without the answer. He knows the answer without the logic.
Then he would be admitting to know the answer without the logic. But he's got a Masoris for that. So what would be wrong with that?
There's a few of them want to go further.
And if one can't, then what does one do? So your Rebbe taught you something, you're challenged by a bigger Talmid Chochem than you. So what are you supposed to do?
Back to the other
Rebbe. And if he's no longer in this world, if you're not E.T., so what are you meant to do? Are you meant to hold by your Rebbe or are you meant to change?
You're absolutely certain that you heard correctly from your Rebbe that
you're absolutely certain you heard from your Rebbe. You saw how he was knowing. That's the way you did it. But so they're asking kashes. So he holds by his Rebbe. So what's he? Why is he afraid of Rav Nachman?
Well, he's not.
He can't show Rav Nachman up. On the contrary. He'll show himself and Rabbi Elazar up. But he knows that, Rabbi. He said it in the name of Rabbi Elazar. So Rabbi Nachman knows that he's got the Masoris. There's an important element that you're missing out.
He doesn't want Rabbi Elazar to get embarrassed.
No, Rabbi Elazar's probably not alive. The element that you're missing out is he's got Talmidim. What does he teach his Talmidim?
What
his Rebbe taught him or what Rabbi Nachman taught him? Are you entitled to teach somebody something that you don't understand? So write for you yourself. You can keep it yourself. That's your own business. You can keep whatever you want. Your Rebbe taught you something. You have confidence it's right. So you keep it yourself. But you can't become a Rebbe again and start teaching that to other people. If you're going to teach to other people, you've got to give them a feel. Now you become their Rebbe. And you've got to be able to give them a feel for it. If we're going to allow things to go like that, then you'll find after a few generations there'll be no understanding of Torah at all. Simply say, that's what my Rebbe taught me. Afflicted concussions, that's how it is. But that you can't pass Torah on that way.
You yourself, fine, you're satisfied that at the time you understood it as best you could. Now somebody's got kashas, good, okay. But you can't teach it. To teach it on like that is not something that one can do comfortably. So Ullah did not want to get into a situation where he would have been challenged, and with his Talmidim would not have been able to teach Rabbi Loz's way. This way he can teach it as best he can. If they don't ask Rav Nachman's kashas, it's fine. If his Talmidim will ask Rav Nachman's kashas, then he's going to be in trouble altogether. But that he's not worried about. The fact that there's some Talmid Chochem somewhere that can ask kashas that I can't understand, that doesn't matter, as long as my Talmidim can understand. So he actually, Rav Nachman would be interfering with the classroom environment. Rav Nachman would be interfering with the Beis HaMedrash environment in Ullah's Beis HaMedrash. So he's got to get Rav Nachman out of the way. The authenticity of what he's saying, he's satisfied with. It comes from Rabbi Lozo. That's no problem. He understands it well enough to explain. He just doesn't understand it well enough to defend to Rav Nachman. That he can't do. So that's between him and Rav Nachman, but that's not to the Talmidim. That's why it tells us, and that's why Rashi tells us, Omalu Ulot Leyoshvin Lefonov, there were people sitting in front of him. And Rav Nachman was there in their presence. That he couldn't afford. To engage in a debate with Rav Nachman in front of his Talmidim, which he would lose, that he couldn't afford to do. And Rav Nachman recognizes that. Rav Nachman realized right away what was happening. Both in Nahardo and Pumpedisa, which were the two main centers of learning in Bovel, there were cases where they wanted to claim Avodim from Yosemim, and the Bosei Din in both places allowed the claims to go through. Like who? Like Ulu. Omalu Rav Nachman Zilu Ahaduru. You see what a leader of Nachman was. He told the Dayonim, go and reap and get it back, because I think your psak was wrong. And if you can't recover the avodim for your soimin, I'll claim from your own homes. You'll have to pay up for this, because that's a psak betos in Choshen Mishpat, in matters of monetary affairs. If a Dayan makes an error in judgment, he is responsible. And the claim can be made against him. Amalei Rova leRav Nachman. So Rova said to Rav Nachman, Ho Ulo, Ho Rabbi Elozor, Ho Dayone de Nahardo, Ho Rav Chana Bar Bizne. Look who you're up against, Rav Nachman. You've got Ulo against you. You've got Rabbi Elozor against you. You've got the Dayonim in Nahardo. You've got Rav Chana Bar Bizne in Pumpedisa. All paskind against you. And you want the Dayonim to go and get the money back to reverse their decisions. Who are you to require this reversal? The majority are against you. Mar keman svirile, where do you get it from? That avodim are kemetaltalin. Amale ano mas niso yodana. I'm not interested in what Rabbi Lozor says and what Ula says and what the Dayonim in Pubedisa and Nardo say. I'm interested in a brisa which I know. I have a makor for it. I have a source which is a brisa, which is a bigger authority than any of them. And that's all I'm interested in. So it's interesting, you see the pressure of lomdus on Ula, and you see the pressure of numbers on Rav Nachman. Ula was being pressurized with logic, which he would not have been able to stand up to. But he's not worried about that, he's got his Masoris. Rav Nachman is being pressurized with numbers. All the Bosei Din and all the Gedolei Israel say Fakert. So I've got my Masoris, I've got a Braisa. And you see the Tkifus Hadas, you see the confidence of these Amiroim, of these Gedolei Israel in their time, in the correctness of following their own view right through to the end.
His Masoris. He doesn't say that my
Rebbe taught me. Yeah, but that's also Masoris. He's got a Braisa, that's fine. Where would he know the Braisa from? The Braises weren't published. They knew the Braisa from Masoris. He was taught that Braisa. With Braises, unlike Mishnahs, you weren't expected to know them all. There was no collection of Braises. There still is no collection of Braises. So there were Amiroyim who paskined on the basis of knowing or not knowing a particular Braisa. And in the debates of the Gemara, these things came out. And this is one example where Rav Nachman says, I know a Braisa. It's possible they didn't know this Braisa. But knowing this Braisa, I cannot paskin any differently. Because it would be against that Braisa. And I've been taught that Braisa. That's how he goes. Says Rashi,
There was a case where the Dayonim claimed even from Yisoyimim. So you see that according to Rashi, to claim from Yisoyimim is more difficult than to claim from a buyer. That's why it says Afilu Miyasmi. Not only from a purchaser, but even from a Yosoyim. Was it a potiki or it wasn't a potiki?
It wasn't.
So why doesn't Rashi say have a uvda v'agbu da'inu da'ado afilu lo yasu a potiki? Wouldn't that be the thing to say? It seems to me from Rashi that's still talking apotiki, that the only thing that Ula is backing down on is that with an apotiki, even from Yosoyimim. Whereas beforehand, the way Rashi learned, even an apotiki could only be claimed from a buyer. But the implication was not from a Yosu. That's what the bottom Rashi says. Apotiki claim a mizei elecho piron v'ashmi'in in Rabbi Elozo. What is the chidush of Rabbi Elozo? The mechoroi goyve balchoiv v'meno. That if it's been sold and it's an apotiki, it can be claimed from a balchoiv. What about a Yosu? Rashi doesn't say anything. And here Rashi says, afilu miyasmi. When Ula backs down, we see that it's even from Yosoyimim, implying that beforehand, what we said beforehand was not Yosoyimim. So for some reason, Rashi appears to be making the chiluk in Yosoyimim and Baya, and that the chidush of the Dayonim of Nardo is that it could be claimed even from Yosoyimim, and Rashi does not say without apotiki. He doesn't say that. We don't know. We'll have to analyze what exactly Rashi means. But on first view, it looks as if we're staying with the sapoitiki. But the chidush here is that they claimed from the Yosoyimim, even from Yosoyimim.
Surely, if we're going to say that avodim ala karka,
it doesn't need apoitiki.
Right. In other words, that when you sell the avodim on.
So that's our kasha on Rashi.
Then
it should say afilu lo yasu apotiki. You can claim from a bal chayiv or from your soyim, it makes no difference.
But the whole statement over here is being made with reference to before the hachav of Maaskina.
And what was the why?
because he's waiting with that answer to his talmidim in the wings. He would like to have said.
So I see what you want to say. So you want to say he's backed out, so he removes all the sapotiki business.
Yes, because that's
he removes all the apotiki. And we go back to the first kasha when Rav Nachman said, Omer Rabbi Lozer, afilu miyasme. The answer is yes. Afilu miyasme.
That's right.
And leave out apotiki, right. And the reason it's afilu miyasme is because
he said that
fine. Okay. We can learn Rashi like that too, definitely. All of them hold that avodim are like karka. Mar de omer ke metaltili. You who say that it's like metaltili, command svirile, who do you hold like? So he answered, I've got a braisa. What is the braisa? The tani avimi. Avimi learnt. Pruzbul chalala karko veinu chalala avodim. One can attach a pruzbul to karka, but not to avodim. Pruzbul is the takona of Hillel that enables a creditor to remove the laws of shmita from a particular chayv. Part of the laws of shmita are that at the 70th, at the shmita time, debts are cancelled. What's the word for that? Debts are...
No,
there's another word for it, isn't there?
Prescribed.
Is it prescribed? Yeah, they're written off at the end of the Shemitah year. So the proof that people stopped lending money, then people couldn't manage. So in order that people shouldn't stop lending money, the Pruzbul Takona was made by Hillel HaZokin. So that provided you made the Pruzbul, you could claim a debt even after the Shemitah period. I mentioned, I think, to the other Shia that this idea of annulling these debts is not only an ethical and a moral idea, it's actually an economic idea as well. There comes a time when it is economically more advantageous to write off debts and carry on doing business. You'll gain more from strengthening your counterpart than killing him. And that was an argument that was placed by Keynes just after the First World War.
England owed America a fortune of money. And the only way England could get the money to pay America was by charging the Germans an awful lot of money in war reparations, and the French and various other people that England had lent money to and had provided arms and weapons and things on credit. So America insisted on getting its payment, which meant England had to insist on getting its payment, which meant heavy reparations had to be placed on Germany, and the other European countries. And Keynes argued at that time very forcefully that nobody was going to get any money this way, that you're going to kill the goose that lays the golden egg. You'll kill Germany, you'll cause another world war, you'll cause hyperinflation, and the money you'll get will be worth nothing in any case. But they didn't listen to him, they continued, and he resigned from the government and so on. And they worked out in the end that what the Americans got was a small proportion of the original debt. Whereas Tucker, had they dropped it and built up Germany as they did after the Second World War, and good, we've got other sources from that, but from a purely economic point of view, so they wouldn't have repaid the debt, but they would have been ongoing customers. And sometimes you can, by insisting on your debt, you do your customer in. By doing your customer in, you've got no further business with him. That's part of the idea of Schmitter. If comes the seventh year and there's still no payment of the debt, you're not going to just forget it already. You're not going to get it. The best you can do is to write it off, build him up, and carry on doing business with him, and you'll recover in the business that you do. You'll recover more than the original debt. But the takon of Hillel is that that's the prusbul, that's the Baal Chayv's option. He must be left now with that option as to whether he wants to do that or whether he wants to take a get his Chayv, otherwise people would stop lending money. Again, you see, that works. That principle of Keynes works, as I said last night, with people who feel uncomfortable at being indebted. If a person, if a Baal Chayv comes to you and says, you know what, I can see you can't pay your debt, let's forget it. If the person is the kind of person that says, I was hoping you would say that. I've been waiting for that day all the time. Thank you, you should care, wonderful. And that's the end of it. Then you're never going to get your money back. But if the person who says, I really appreciate you doing that, it makes me feel very uncomfortable, and I assure you, you'll never regret it, then you will get your money back. So it depends on the morality of the person you're dealing with. To write off debts for people who want the debts written off doesn't work. And that's when Hillel realized that's what changed. The whole system of Schmitter ceased to work when people ceased to feel uncomfortable about it. When people accepted it as a handout, as a gift, and didn't mind it, which it is, it's a handout, it's tzedakah. That's really what it is. It's converting the loan into tzedakah. And you have the person say, I'm quite happy to take the tzedakah, thank you. Then the whole principle of Schmitter ceases to work. When a person says, I feel terrible, that's the worst thing you can do to me, it's a pain. Can work. That was the principle. Now the principle works on attaching the loan to property, where it's not just a hischaivus, you're actually owning a part of his property. That way it ceases to be a loan and it becomes ownership as such. So even after the Shmita, you still own that property, so to say. Now you can use karke in the principle, you can't use an eved. So we see from there that avodim do not have the halachic status of karke, but of metaltalim. Another example, the same brisa, metaltalin nikneim imakarke, veina nikneim imahavodi. That when it comes to karke, if a person makes a kinyan on the karke, if I do a package deal with you, I sell you property and certain metaltalin, all in one deal. You only have to make a kinyan on the karke, and automatically you've made the kinyan on the metaltalin as well. But if I sell you an eved and metaltalin, it is not sufficient to make a kinyan on the eved.
No, it is logically sound to say that if two laws don't apply to two situations, then another law doesn't apply to
it. No, but we're going to analyze what the parameters are.
So according to Rav Nachman, Rav Nachman's not worried about this because Rav Nachman feels that this is a sufficiently fundamental principle in the laws of karka and metaltalin to be the principle itself. We're going to challenge that. We're going to look at other areas to see where exactly it fits in. It says Rashi. Not necessarily. But the Gemara discusses further down. Says Rashi, Pruzbul mefarish begitin, shetikein Hillel hazokin. Pruzbul is discussed in Gitin, where Hillel hazokin was mesakin, Pruzbul, kedei shaloi tishamet shviz hamilde. So that shviz will not cancel out the loans. Chal ala karko,
the kiven the loy mechusri guvaina, since karka is there and it doesn't lack actual claims, you don't then have to establish your rights and your claims. It was established before. And really what I'm saying is that all claims that you have on me, you have, it's as if you've already claimed them, you just haven't taken delivery. That's really what a prusbul is. So before Shemitah comes, what I'm saying is it's as if you claim now, and your claim has been given substance to, and I've acknowledged it, but I just haven't delivered it to you. That's why Shemitah doesn't undo it. If he sold him karka and metaltalin, and he made a kinyan chazoke in the karka, one has acquired the metaltalin even though he has not pulled and he has not done any act of kinyan on the metaltalin. If a person possessed the avodim, he does not automatically acquire the metaltalin. The yochel moichel lachzoy b'metaltalin, and the seller can still renege on the deal of the metaltalin, although he cannot renege on the deal of the eved. So although it was one contract, one deal, an eved and his clothes, let's say, an eved and metaltalin, and I possess the eved in the way of kinyan, the seller can no longer renege on the eved, but he can still renege on the metaltalin, on the clothes, and say, I want to back out on the sale of the clothes, because a kinyan has not yet been performed on them. Alma avdeke metaltalim. So we see in these areas avodim are treated as metaltalim, not as kark. And this is the source of Rav Nachman's halacha. Says the Gemara leime ketanoi, but there are other brises that say the other. So maybe this whole argument between Ula and Rav Nachman is really a machlokes tanoim. It goes further back. But this machlokes goes to the time of the Mishnah, that there wasn't clarity as to whether avodim should be classified with kalko and metaltalim. For we also have a brisa that says mocha lui avodim v'kalkos, if a person sold another person slaves and kalka, hechazik b'avodim lui kona kalkos b'kalkos lui kona avodim. That by making a kinyan in one, either in the eved or in the kalka, you're not koina the other. However, kalkos and metaltalim, hechazik b'kalka kona metaltalim v'metaltalim lui kona kalko. If a person was koina metaltalin and karka, then by being koine the karka, you are koine the metaltalin, but by being koine the metaltalin, you are not being koine the karka. Now comes the test case. Avodim and metaltalin? What about a slave and metaltalin? Hechazik bi avodim loikono metaltalin, the metaltalin loikono avodim. If he made a chazok in the avodim, he was not koine the metaltalin, and vice versa. So what do we see? Karka is like what? Avodim is like?
Nothing.
No, why in the middle? It's like metaltalin. It's like metaltalin. You cannot use the like the first brisa. Va'atanya, but we learned elsewhere, hechazik ba'avodim kono metaltalin. There is another brisa that says no. If you make a kinyan in the eved, you can be koine the metaltalin. So we have two brisas explicitly. One saying you can be koine the metaltalin agav the karka, and one saying you can't. My love, b'hayah kamitvigi. Surely this is their machlokes. The ma'asover avodim kimekakoy dami, u'ma'asover avodim kimetaltali dami. Says Rashi. Achi garsina bekarka lo ikona avodim. If you machzik the karka, you're not koine the avodim. Ve'af agav desvidele lahay tana avodim kimetaltali dami. And even though this tana might well hold that avodim are like metaltali, nafilu achi lo ikona. Nevertheless, you're not koine. Unless the eved is standing in the karka, as the Gemara will explain further on, there's a difference between moving metaltalin and non-moving metaltalin. That's a difficult rashi which we're going to have to have a look at in the next
year. But about the first line of that brasa, we should already have asked the question. If the thesis of the Tana of this brasa is that avodim or metaltalin?
Right. Then
avodim should be koine with a karka.
Right. So mimondav shechet. So that's why Rael said it's neither.
So mistoma. Right. There's also another girsa which has got that.
Correct. Has anybody gone further in the Gemara than this? In the Chavrus, how far you go? Did you get down to the bottom of the page?
Yeah.
You're down to the bottom of the page. Anybody else?
Yeah.
Down to the bottom. Isn't it? Oh, fantastic. That's good. Should we go a little further? We've got another 5 minutes. Who has to leave now? Well, you have to leave now. Let's just go a little bit further. Omer Rav Ike Breid Rav Ami. So answers Rav Ike Breid Rav Ami, the Kula Alma Avodim Kemekarkoidami. No, there is no machlikis. Both these brises hold that Avodim are like Karka. Like who? Like Ulo or like Rav Nachman? Like Ulo. And that's why they came down heavily on Rav Nachman. Bahad Tanya Kono Shapir, Bahad Tanya Loi Kono. So the one that says that if you do a Kinyan in Karka, you're Koine and Eved, that's good. But you do a Kinyan in Eved, you're Koine and Metaltalin, that's good. Because the Eved is like Karka. Bahad Tanya Loi Kono. So all our problem is, how are we going to explain if Eved is like Karka, why by doing a Kinyan in the Eved are you not Koine the Metaltalin? There are different types of Karka. The concept of Karka is not all the same. And the law of Kinyan Agav, the fact that you can be Koine Metaltalin by doing a Kinyan in Karka, is based on a posuk concerning the cities of Yehuda, which are which is immovable karka. Karka de loy naidi. It's not as we learn. Nechosim she'en loy machrayis niknim nechosim she'esh loy machrayis. Nechosim she'en loy machrayis, that means metaltalin, can be purchased with nechosim that have achrayis, which is karka. Kesef b'shtaru v'chazoka. Using any of the normal kinyonim which apply to karka, you can use for metaltalin if they're being transferred together with karka. Minani mili, where do we learn it from? Omar Chizkiya, Omar Kos. As Chizkiya, it was the pasuk said, by yiten lohem avihem matonus rabbis the kesef ulazov ulamigdonis im orim mitzuris v'yehuda. Their fathers had given them great gifts, many gifts, silver, gold, and fine, precious things, together with the fortified cities of Yehuda. So you see that he gave them metaltalin together with the karka. But that's dafka karka. That's a gzeres hakosuv in a sense then. That this kinyan works only with immovable karka. So although we're going to classify our avodim as karka, it can't be learned from this gzeiras hakosuv. Says Rashi, dum yedorim betzurus, the mehai kro nafkelon b'maseches kiddushin. From this pasuk we learn in kiddushin, the metaltlin niknin becheskas karkos, that metaltlin can be acquired with the chazoka of karka. Dichtiv, as it says, vayitin loy naviyim matonus imorim betzurus hilkach b'inan mekarkoy de loy naidi ki hosom. Therefore we need karka that doesn't move, like there. Up till there, in Yud Sashim on tomorrow night, we will go further to the two dots, and then we'll start the sugi again and analyze it carefully.